I just feel like there was also more to show in addition to the legacy of the jazz legends. And I, you know, try to make it a point to include everyday people, you know, in that same conversation, like, and almost to photograph them like they're as great as these legends that the world knows, you know.
What's going on, y'all? You have just tuned in to the Black Shutter Podcast. On this show, I invite Black photographers, filmmakers, editors, and creative business folks to discuss their experiences and share their wisdom. You will hear about their work, their challenges, and their inspirations. My name is Idris Talib Solomon, a creative director, photographer, and filmmaker based in Brooklyn, New York. So if you dig photography and you love the culture, keep your mind open and your headphones locked. This is the Black Shutter Podcast. We are all products of our surroundings in some shape or form. From the people, to the energy, to the sound, sights, and smell. As photographers, our environment can shape how we experience the world. And those experiences determine the kinds of images we make. When we are able to appreciate the environment that molded us, the current residents give themselves permission to appreciate it as well. Our guest in this episode feels at home in photography. He was brought up in a neighborhood that was home to several prominent Black figures, St. Albans in Queens, New York. With that amount of pride and history in his childhood home, he has been influenced to photograph people with the same dignity of the legends who lived there before him. His work focuses on long-term portrait-based projects that celebrate historically underrepresented communities, referencing lived experiences through the nuances of music, pride, race, and resilience. Elias Williams, welcome to the Black Shutter Podcast. How you feeling out there, bro?
I'm good, bro. How are you?
I'm doing good. So thank you for taking the time to, you know, for us to jump on this conversation, man. It's actually been, I think, like 2 years in the making.
Yo, it's like 3 years.
3 years. All right. Yeah, I thought I was doing better with two. So exactly. 3 years, man. I think that's, you know, sometimes things happen by design. Things happen when they're supposed to happen. And especially with this podcast, I feel like it's not a matter of if, but when. Like, there's so many dope Black photographers out there that I want to, you know, have conversations with and share their stories. And you know, this is just the right time for us to jump on and have this conversation, man. So I'm happy that the stars aligned for this moment.
Yeah, same. Feel the same way, man.
Yeah, man. So, so E, tell us, man, where are you from? Where are you calling from right now?
So I'm calling from Woodstock, in the middle of a residency with the Center of Photography at Woodstock.
Beautiful.
It's a 4-week-long program. And, you know, I picked the perfect time to come up here during the fall, you know. So right now, I'll just be working on some personal work, you know, trying to fully realize the project and figure out what I have, what I need to complete it. So
that's amazing, man. I'm familiar with the Center of Photography residency program. But, you know, I don't know anybody who's gone through it. And so I haven't really heard anybody's experience. So that's dope that you're up there, man. Like, tell us a little bit about what that experience has been for you. You said it's 4 weeks. Like, what week are you? What week are you right now?
Right now I'm in week two.
Got it.
Yeah. So right now I'm really just using my time to go through negatives, and they have all the equipment you would need here. Nice. To do those things. Everybody's super supportive. You know, if you want to switch directions for any reason, they've got your back and support you through it. So, you know, it's been cool here.
That's amazing. So you bring work up there that you already have, and you're trying to like figure out what to do with it, how to edit it, or are you up there like making new work as well?
Right now I'm just going through what I have. Yeah. Like, you have the option of doing either or, make work up here or, you know, sit with the work you've already done.
That's amazing, man. I feel like it's
It's the equivalent of a vacation for professionals, it sounds like, you know, because how often do we get to just sit and focus on the work without thinking about all these other life responsibilities? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. A lot of people can't afford to just take time off from work just to focus on personal projects.
Exactly, man. That's especially like if photography hasn't become your main moneymaker. It's something that you're still doing in addition to, you know, having like a different type of job that's not photography related. I can see how that's a challenge as well, because, you know, a lot of photographers are really talented and are finding a way to make it their bread and butter, their initial thing. But then also photographers who have families, it might be challenging for those folks to get away for like 4 weeks nonstop to just focus on a project. So, congratulations that you have that opportunity, man.
Yeah, appreciate it, man.
So you're calling from Woodstock, but where are you from initially?
So I'm originally from Jamaica, Queens, and spent most of my time in St. Albans, Queens, in my childhood. So that's really where I'm from. Right now, you know, I've been in the Bronx probably for the last 15, 16 years.
So where do you consider home? What do you call home?
Both. Both are home right now, but, you know, at the root, you know, I'm always going to be a Queens kid. So, you know, can never shake that part of my history. So,
you know, it's interesting, man. One of my good friends from college, I think he grew up in Cambria Heights in Queens.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
But goes to church in the Bronx, and now he lives like pretty much like right there north of Bronx. So he was always, it was like that section of Queens that is like really close to the Bronx. That's like a 20-minute drive. So I can see how like being from that part of Queens, like you're in the Bronx and then back to Queens in the Bronx. So I definitely see the relation. You know, it's funny. I think we met, back in 2017, I want to say, 17 or 18. And I don't know if you remember, I think this was, you were a Magnum, you were one of the Magnum fellows.
Yeah, yeah.
And we met at a friend's house in Red Hook, Alexis Lambro. She had like, she was working at Magnum and, not Magnum official. What was it? It's Magnum.
Magnum Foundation.
Foundation. The Magnum Foundation. She was working there, and she invited a bunch of like the fellows to her house, and we were just kicking it on the roof. And I think that's where I met you, and I met some of the other fellows, and I just thought that was pretty cool, like that whole experience. So you know, it's dope that to hear like right now you're in Woodstock, at a residency, but you know I met you when you were part of this foundation for photographers. You know, so it sounds like you are pretty tapped into a lot of different opportunities that are available to photographers, right? That's great.
Well, I try to be.
I mean, I think that's one approach that a lot of folks can, you know, add to their, I guess, strategy of how to, you know, figure out a path in this industry. You know, like, how did you get familiar with the Magnum Foundation?
I got familiar with the Magnum Foundation through Alexis, and it was during a portfolio review, the New York portfolio review in 2015. And I think that's where I met you. That's where I first met you. I met Alexis. She told me about the program, encouraged me to, you know, just stay in the loop and apply to anything that, you know, feels true to the work that I'm doing and what I want to do with it. So around, I think two years had passed, and the photography and social justice fellowship came along, and it just felt right for what I wanted to do at the time. I probably spent a couple months on the application, got advice from mentors. One actually knew a good grant writer. And, you know, she gave me some advice on how to put together a well-rounded proposal. So, yeah, and then, you know, sure enough, I was in the program.
Nice, man. And what, you know, what did that experience do for you? Like, yeah, what did that experience do for you?
Yeah, so I went into it with an idea related to St. Albans and how I wanted to document the loss of people who have lost their homes to foreclosure. But the unfortunate part of that, you know, seeking out those people was that, you know, a lot of them didn't want to talk about their situation. Mm-hmm. But then I started to think about the people that were still there and, you know, decided to focus on the theme of Black homeownership in my hometown. And, you know, they were totally on board with, you know, me shifting towards that approach. And, you know, you're surrounded by other photographers from all over the world. And, you know, you get to see how other people look at your work differently, and it also causes you to think about it in different ways. So, you know, that was super, super helpful. It was like a really important experience during that time, you know. Otherwise, you just, you know, in the loop with the people that are in New York City and, you know, that offered opportunity to think outside of the box and how I could explain it to other people.
Yeah, I think that is, when you're in the early stages of your career, it's so beneficial to have, like, mentors or some experienced folks who can take a look at where you're at and give, and, you know, just drop some jewels on where, you know, where you are presently and how you can actually take, you know, big leaps forward with your work, you know. And it sounds like you were able to get some, like, really important information from some of these folks based on, like, the opportunities that you reached out for, you know.
Right. Yes, like there are very few programs that are going over digital security and making sure that you know, look out for yourself. Like, we had somebody blanking out on their name, but they just reminded us to take care of ourselves while we're working on these stories. And I don't think a lot of programs are mindful of those types of things. So
can you tell us a little bit about what you mean? What do you mean digital security?
How can I explain it? It's more like protecting your images, protecting the people that are in your photographs, you know, like removing metadata, things like that, protect your hard drives, from being, you know, hacked and things like that.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't learning that, and I don't know, I'm not even aware of that. So that's really great that you were able to learn some of those things, because it's not something that it's not information that is readily available. Because another question I would ask is, like, well, why is it important to understand digital security? And then, like, who would hack into our files, and what purpose would they use that information for? Like, these are like the questions that come up for me, because I wouldn't even think about protecting my images like that, because I'm like, right. Well, what the hell would anybody use these images for, you know, in that regard? So do you have any additional information on some of those questions?
Yeah, like, so for example, you're photographing a community that's, you know, at risk, mm-hmm. you know, like, you know, by local gangs or, you know, extremist groups, you know, it can be just an everyday person or anybody with the knowledge to, like, find, dig information that you don't want, that you wouldn't want to share of a person's life, mm-hmm. because, you know, you just never know. You never know how a certain image, whether you're doing it with good intentions or not, how that can, like, lead back to the person in the photograph. like for like anonymous photographs of people. You know, people can pinpoint location, look through metadata and files, and
So I know that during during the pandemic, when there were a lot of protest photos coming out, that was something huge. And a lot of people were saying, telling photographers, especially like the black photographers out there covering, to be mindful of getting people's faces in these images, because police were using, police and all types of other groups were using this information to go make arrests of people. And then, you know, we were seeing how some of these activists were being like, there's no proof, but some of these really big activists in different cities across the country were wound up like dead randomly. And it was like a lot of people saying we have to be really mindful of, you know, digital security, because people are now being targeted based on the images that we're taking. Like, so to your point, so that's like a really important point to understand. So thank you. Thank you for bringing some clarity to that, man.
No problem.
So I know you call St. Albans home, but you also call the Bronx home. But growing up, what was life like in your home? How did your family view the arts?
My home, you know, everybody, you know, had, you know, their 9-to-5s or working with the city. And, you know, art was something that you would support as, you know, something that you would have in the home. But as far as having a career, my mom was the only one that really supported that idea. So she found a way, you know, to give me color pencils, oil crayons, and like paint, and like a wooden set box with my name etched on it when I, you know, expressed that I wanted to get into drawing. But, you know, after some time, I kind of fell out of that. I wasn't aware of the resources that were around me at the time. But later on in life, when I got into photography, you know, she was all in. You know, all she really wanted for me was to just speak up, and, you know, and tell her, like, just like tell her like what my dreams were, like what it is I wanted to do. And, you know, she just had my back. She told me she would support me in doing all of that. So when I decided to become a photographer, she helped me get my first iMac, a DSLR camera. And, you know, a few years after that, she put me onto the New York Times Portfolio Review before I even knew what it was in 2013. And that helped kickstart my career. I almost had to prove that I really love photography for, you know, my family to be on board. So you know, now it's all good. But
I mean, now I hope it's all good, right? Like, you're doing some amazing work now. If people are doubting you, it's like, damn, what else you got to do? But well, what did you have to do? That's interesting. Like, and that's not the first time I've heard something like that, right? You know, parents, we, you know, want to look out for our kids and make sure that they are able to take care of themselves. And as a parent, you know, I definitely want our son to be independent. So it is a balance between wanting him to do something that I think will work out for him versus allowing him to do what he wants to do so that he can develop into the person he needs to become, right? So what did you need to do in order to prove that this was the right path for you?
I had to spend, well, this is like skipping a lot of the story, but I had to spend a lot of money on film for people to, like understand how important photography was to me and what I wanted to do with my life, you know?
Yeah.
I felt like after going through so many years growing up of, you know, not knowing what it was that I wanted to do, like truly, and like bouncing around from different things, really felt at home with photography. So yeah.
I had a very similar upbringing where drawing was my introduction to art. And I remember copying, like, there were these older kids that lived in my building who were already, like, drawing comic books. They were, like, they had comic books, and they would, like, get paper, and they would, like, copy what they were seeing in the comics. And I, as a young kid, I was maybe, like, five years old, seeing these older kids, like, 6, 7, 8, excited about drawing. I started copying them, and I started, like, looking at comic books and drawing. So that was my introduction. And fast forward a bunch of years later, you know, photography became something that I was interested in. But I don't remember really how I became interested in photography. It's sort of like this long blur between drawing and then having a camera in my hand, like taking a class. And I don't even know when I realized that pictures was something that I was interested in. What is your earliest memory of photography?
So I think in 2007, that's where it really clicked for me. I was already a big fan of this basketball magazine called Slam. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd buy every issue every month. You know, I would just be admired by the posters, the fold-out posters in the magazine. Would cut them out, hang them on my wall. And, you know, over time, I just decided that I would love to make pictures exactly like the ones that I'm hanging on my wall. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I started looking up cameras. And like, what is the camera you need for sports photography? And clearly those were super expensive.
Yep.
But I had a summer job that year, and at the end of the program, it was a summer youth employment program.
Summer UU.
Yeah. So my last day, I went to a Radio Shack in the Bronx, found a little point and shoot. And, you know, from there, I was open. You know, I didn't even care about, you know, sports photography in particular. I was just happy to be making pictures of anything, anybody, anywhere. So I think that's when it clicked for me.
Okay, so you're back and forth between St. Albans and the Bronx. You got this camera in 2007. Where did you go to school? Like, when did it click? Because there's a gap between, like, what I'm hearing and then, like, you know, becoming, like, a Magnum Foundation Fellow and a resident at Woodstock. I want to kind of fill in the gaps a little bit, right? So, like, what did you study in school and where'd you go?
I went to LaGuardia Community College.
Okay.
And did a 2-year program for commercial photography.
I didn't even know they had a program. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's like this little hidden program that's actually really, really, really great just to get you up and running.
Really?
It's like, yeah.
That's good to know. I'm going to definitely start pointing some young people in that direction. But all right, go ahead.
Yeah, they just exposed me to different genres of photography. So, you know, I kind of only found interest more in like film photography during that time. And yeah.
You shoot primarily film?
No, no. Yeah.
Is that like what, that's it? It's all film?
For the most part. I mean, like for editorial work, and when I was just wanted to do really quick things, I would just shoot digitally just because it was more affordable and you didn't have to spend all the money on black and white film, my classes there.
And now, so, what do you do?
Now I'm all over the place. So, it depends on what I'm working on. I'll shoot, you know, if it's personal, most times I'll shoot film. But if it's for work, I'm mostly shooting digitally.
So, you know, I see a consistency in your work and like the way that is, the grading, the color grading, right? So when you shoot digital, do you process the images to make it look like film, to mirror how like your film images come out?
Yeah. It took a really long time to like figure out how to tone digital images similar to the way I was photographing on film. But yeah, I try to make it consistent. So, you know, if I ever find myself in a situation where I need to shoot both, or whether I want to shoot both, you know, I can have a consistent palette.
Yeah, that's great. It's definitely on the warmer side of things. You know, yeah, I feel like a lot of times, especially like with the Instagram age, a lot of people were making their digital images look like film, maybe using some filters, some presets. But you're very intentional with making your digital images look like film because you shoot film and you need all your images to be consistent across. So that makes a lot of sense. You know, it's not like it's just a nostalgia type of thing, or it's a trending thing for you. It's like this is part of my workflow type of thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, I just enjoy the physicality of film and, you know, being able to like accept the mistakes with film as opposed to digital, where, you know, you can fix things up. But yeah, I would say a large portion of my work is with film, you know?
So, okay, you go to LaGuardia for 2 years, and, you know, was that around the time when you got the camera in 2007, or, like, where were we at in the timeline?
Okay, so, yeah, went to LaGuardia Community College in 2009. In those two years prior, I was, you know, photographing like varsity basketball, junior varsity basketball games in high school. But when I got to LaGuardia Community College, there wasn't anybody really focusing on basketball or basketball photography. So, you know, at that time, I had to get a film camera and I had to upgrade my that point and shoot to like a Nikon D90.
Okay.
Yeah. So I went into that program, like just being open to anything. You know, if I couldn't do sports and I was already like falling out of sports photography, I just dove into whatever they had available so I could find, like truly like learn what it is that I like and what I like to make.
So you went through the program in 2009, 2 year program. So around 2011, what did you do for like those 5 years, 6 years before becoming like a Magna Foundation fellow?
So I ended up, they told me at the last minute that I had another class to take. So I had to stay till 2012. And yeah, so in between then and, you know, graduating and the Magna Foundation fellowship, I was working at CVS. So I thought I was ready to work. I thought I was ready to, you know, become an editorial photographer, you know, work an internship. And, you know, I constantly got denied for things. Then I realized how little there was that I knew. So, I mean, I had to work. So I worked at CVS, and that wasn't the greatest experience, but.
But you needed it.
Yeah, exactly. I needed it. And, you know, while it wasn't great, I used the money I got from that to like start photographing in St. Albans in 2012.
Yeah, man. Sometimes they say you need the frustration to build to a certain point where like that volcano erupts And once you get to that point where you're so frustrated with what you're doing because you know you want to be doing something else, like you're in CVS, you're just like, oh, I want to be out there in these streets making images. Like, once that frustration gets to a certain point and it boils over, is nowhere else for that energy to go but into that thing that you want to do, you know? And so CVS might have just been that, the hot water, the hot fire under the water boiling, you know what I'm saying? To help you get to that boiling point where you're going to jump into what you really need to do.
Yeah, yeah, like they had a, they had their own photo department, but I like made it a point to make sure that I never brought up that I was a photographer outside of work, because I didn't want to be stuck in the color lab, you know, working through a process that I wasn't really interested in. So, you know, I tried to do something completely different photography than from photography in that space, so that when I left work, it was all of my mind was only focused on photography, making time to make images.
What's up, family? If you're enjoying this episode, do us a solid by leaving us a 5-star rating or reviewing the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Play. We appreciate the support. So on that note, we're going to get back into the show. Peace. That's an interesting strategy, because some people might have done it the opposite and said, well, I can't be out there making photos, but at least I get to be in a photo lab. So it's interesting that you separated it as a way to stay, you know, targeted. You know what I mean? It's really interesting.
Right. Yeah. Like I've seen through my time at LaGuardia Community College, you see so many people are super talented and, you know, have their dreams of becoming photographers, and they have to pivot, and, you know, they lose that love for photography, some of them. And I just don't want to be that person. So it just allowed me to, by focusing on just working in stock, you know, it allowed me to go outside of work and just being the photographer that I wanted to be and making the images that I wanted to make without, you know, without any direction from others. So.
Yeah, man, that's great. And it's important that you were able to do that. You know, you mentioned the St. Albans project. I feel like looking at that work, that is a beautiful portrait of a neighborhood. And I know that most of your work is in portrait photography. So I say that very intentional, that you are, because even though you focus on portraits of people, the way that you're photographing your St. Albans project is like a portrait of this neighborhood. And it, you know how some rappers be putting their city on the map? I feel like, you know, every time I see your name, it's related to St. Albans. And I feel like for photographers, you're like putting St. Albans on the map for photography. You know what I mean? What for you was special about St. Albans that made you say, hey, I want to document my hometown and show it in a way that hasn't been seen before?
All right, so St. Albans has a lot of rich history in housing many jazz legends, you know, through the early, like late 30s and into the 70s. But, you know, there's also a Tribe Called Quest who was formed out there. LL Cool J lived out there. And, you know, those, I just feel like there was also more to show in addition to the legacy of the jazz legends. And I, you know, try to make it a point to include everyday people, you know, in that same conversation, like, and almost to photograph them like they're as great as these legends that the world knows, you know. So initially when I started the project, I just wanted to go around and you know, photograph the everyday people there, people from my own experience in St. Albans and places I've been. And really it was a simple goal of just trying to show where I'm from. And what that's really what I started out telling people that I met out in the street. But then over time, it just, you mature over the years and you start to look at the work differently and see that there aren't a lot of photographs of working and middle class Black people, you know, doing well.
You said there aren't?
There aren't a lot. Okay. There aren't enough.
Okay.
So I was trying to build onto the conversation of what did exist. Mm.
So you started to approach it from the historical perspective as well.
Right.
Wow. Was this part of the project that you proposed for the Magna Foundation?
Yeah. So I wanted to focus on homeownership specifically in a separate chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And I really just used the work that I had made over the years up until that point to get into that.
So it sounds like this project had been already incubating. It's already been like marinating for a while. Growing up there, like, what did you see that made it interesting, that made it stand out to you, that said this is something that's worth documenting as a story? I feel like a lot of people aren't always able to see the stories that are in their own backyard. They go far off into the, you know, other places to find stories, but you were able to find that magical nugget in your own hometown. Like, what was it about it that stood out for you?
Oh, well, you know, it's St. Albans considered a part of New York City. And, you know, when you're there, it looks nothing like mm-hmm. the stereotypical definition of what New York City is. It's very on the edge of suburban, mixed with some nuggets of a city like experience. And I think that was the biggest draw for me, was that, you know, there aren't a lot of places in New York City that look like this, that house Black people. And I just wanted to bring more light to that. And also that rich history with music.
Mm. Yeah, that's something that I didn't know about, the music part. Did Louis Armstrong live in St. Albans as well?
No.
Okay.
I think that's Corona, Queens.
Okay, because he has a museum. His house, like his house as a museum, right? That's in Corona?
Yeah.
Okay. Still very interesting. I think you mentioned that James Brown lived there, Jackie Robinson. Who are some more notable people that lived in St. Albans?
So there's John Coltrane,
mm-hmm.
Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, Count Basie.
Wow.
Manhattan, Illinois Jacquette, Roy Campanella played with Jackie Robinson. there's so many.
That's pretty cool. So your work seems to focus a lot on portraiture, right? So like, what is it about photographing people that interests you? I know you mentioned that you started drawing at an early age and you were drawing people. So I think this mm-hmm. is, you know, when I heard you mention that, I was like, oh, okay, maybe that's how he got interested in portraiture. But I want to hear from you, like, what is it about working with people and photographing them in a specific way that appeals to you?
And so, like, that story goes back to LaGuardia Community College and, you know, probably a year before I was graduating. And, you know, I've met some really great photographers in that program. So know, they were photographing everyday people. Like one was Rudy Diaz and Stephen Chalmers. And, you know, they were photographing everyday people in and around New York City. And it just felt very real, you know. It felt like, you know, they weren't staged. I felt like they were being themselves on the camera. Mm-hmm. And the two of them were really good at just photographing people as they are, but with you know, with dignity. Mm. And that was always something that I was drawn to. And Rudy Diaz had passed away last year. But he photographed a lot of the hip hop people in hip hop that are like famous now, like Kendrick Lamar, Joey Wow. Badass.
Wow.
Like before they were who they are now, you know. So he had this really beautiful portrait of Kendrick Lamar, like I think it was like a chicken spot from 2011. And that was really, once I saw that portrait in particular, then I was like, this is something that I would love to do. So I started, you know, learning about the inspirations like Dawood Bey, Richard Rinaldi, you know, Alex Soth, all these other like really great portrait photographers. And, you know, I had, you know, because of them, the people I met in school, I had the foundation of the history of that particular approach to portrait photography.
So you mentioned, a key word. You said dignity. Like when you said that, that stood out for me. Photographing people with dignity. You know, the fact that you mentioned that means that there's a flip side. There's people who photograph people without dignity, right? Like, and you know, that's something that historically, you know, I don't know about you, like, but sometimes, you know, photographing some of our own folks is a challenge because of this negative perception of how the images will be used.
Right.
You know, because there's been a lack of dignity in how we've been photographed, you know, for a very long time. So how do you approach your portrait work, you know, with some of those lessons that you learned from these two classmates or these two colleagues of yours?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really ask very little questions. I just, you know, observe the work and try to form my own language of how to get that out of people. But I would often just be like very, very direct with people and, you know, just say, it's like, I just want you to be confident in front of the camera and be yourself. And early on, those are like really like some of the key words that really got that out. That really got that out of people for me. So, you know, and, you know, very little directing. I'm really just relying on people to be themselves, you know, that's how I capture that.
So it's almost like going fishing. You got to just like sit and wait.
Yeah. I mean, with portraiture, you know, you've really got to know when to see that in people. And sometimes it's fleeting.
And
especially with street portraits, people in most cases are on the move and you're stopping them and you've got very little time to really capture that before they're back on their way.
Yeah.
Some will be nice enough to hold a conversation with you, talk about the camera that you have, what it is you're doing the work for, And as they're talking to you and you're listening, you know, you see something in them, and you try to make a mental note to go back to that. So
I remember hearing that, you know, sometimes the appropriate image happens right before or right after we take the picture. you know, there's usually like this moment where somebody might be contemplative and in thought. And then we might miss that moment, take the picture, and then after they finish their thought, there's like this resolve that happens in their facial expression, and then you're like, ah. So sometimes it's like what we think is the picture, we may get it sometimes, but it's also important to focus on what's happening right before we take the picture, and then also right after we take the picture, you know?
Yeah, right.
With your style of photography, you know, you get a call from New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Nat Geo or something, and you have your images need to be paired with a story, right? How do you approach photographing someone for a specific type of story? If it's a story that is like an uplifting story, or one that is a little bit more sad, or, you know, something about social justice. How do you go into an assignment like that and take the appropriate type of portrait for that story?
I think you got to keep in mind the sensitive aspects of a story. And really, I try to, you know, check my ego at the door, and, you know, just try to be like a family member, you know, like, you know, being aware of what they've gone through. And, you know, while you're there to make work of this person, if it's like a sad story, you know, I try to bring light to the situation. So, you know, I might make a few jokes while, you know, a writer could be talking to the subject the person I'm supposed to be photographing. They might have, you know, another family member that I could just, you know, vibe with and learn more about the person, and just keep that in mind when it is time to make that portrait. And I'm really just really trying to make people comfortable as best as possible. Yeah, but if it's a more uplifting story, man, we just play all day long, man. so you know, that's like also good for me too, because it, you know, I'm not just stuck in this one lane where I have to make these very specific pictures. And, you know, you take that home sometimes. So, like, I've been fortunate to have the balance of two types of stories, the more uplifting and the more, like, serious, somber stories.
Yeah, man. Sometimes, like, images, especially for us, right, we're visual, you know, right. And we look at our images thousands of times. You know, the average person may see our images a few times, right? But we see our images thousands of times, the same exact image, right? Sometimes you get tired of these images. But when we focus on a story that is a little bit more emotional, those images still stay with us. And, you know, it's great that you have that balance of, you know, maybe more, you know, like a sadder story paired with like a more uplifting, happier story, so that it's not just the same type of work. You know, like, I give it up for photographers who are able to do conflict photography and to be in those spaces like day in and day out. And I'm just like, man, like, I hope that there's some sort of joy in your life that you're able to like decompress, talk to somebody after you're in these different spaces, because that's a lot of work. And can you imagine like having to edit that kind of work, go back and look through your images and have to edit these like on a regular basis? Like,
yeah.
So I'm happy to hear that you have that balance as well. I see that you know, you photograph Spike Lee, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Cornel West, you know, some really prominent figures in the Black community, and would never photograph, in many cases, photographing prominent figures, whether they're celebrities, entertainers, political figures. We don't always have a whole lot of time to work with them. So, like, how does your approach shift when you're photographing these types of folks versus maybe someone in St. Albans?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to like notable figures, especially some that have been like photographed numerous times and photographed very well, you try to fit your way into the conversation of those groups of images mm-hmm. that are really strong and have staying power. So I do a lot of, you know, photographic research on the portraits that have been done of these people. And I also, you know, have references from other forms of art that I like borrow from, create mood boards, just so I can keep in mind what's already been done and what I can add. Mm-hmm. Add to their visual legacy. So I think that's the biggest part for me, and, you know, having a clear cut idea, but also being okay with like staring away from it so that, you know, you don't get stuck with a bad image because you have very little time and can't adjust quickly. So I think in some ways, like, doing street portraits helped a lot because you have about as much time with a notable person as you would anybody that's out on the street trying to get their groceries home. So,
yeah,
you know, I feel like that like prepared me for like seeing things quickly, but also in addition to that, I have my references to go back to and that helps me adjust quickly if something's not working out.
That's interesting, man, because it sounds like, you know, street photography, street portraiture prepared you for learning how to make portraits of people really quickly. And it's one of those things where you may look at a street photographer and look at their work, and it just feels like, wow, this person just always ends up in the right place at the right time, at the right light, at the right people. But there is this research and references that you stack up for when you are in those situations. So it's almost like you make it look like it's like you're freestyling with it, but you've actually done a lot of the work behind the scenes to make sure you're prepared for different scenarios that might come up.
Right. Yeah.
That's dope. So, you know, you've developed this portrait style. You've gone through some, you know, pretty dope photo experiences and workshops. You're at, you know, Woodstock right now. Like, how do you see, you know, your work evolving in the next few years?
You know, as I, you know, explore, you know, other artistic approaches, particularly with music, you know, I'm trying to, you know, make more work that's focused in the scope of music with photography. So, you know, after, you know, I complete the two long-term projects I have going on now, you know, that's where, you know, see myself heading in, but also in addition to that, getting the work into private collections, you know, creating a book, you know, making sure that I leave like a lasting legacy of the communities that I photograph behind, you know. That's more of where my focus is, you know, focusing on like, the best way I can put it is, like, there's this album by Common called Finding Forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ever since I listened to that, I try to think about how I can make my work last forever, you know. So I'm still in the process of doing that. I'm still on my mission with that. So, but that's where I see myself going in the next few years. This is Elias Williams, and you tuned into the Black Shutter Podcast.
I want to give a big shout out to everyone who tuned into this episode. Thank you for listening. The Black Shutter Podcast is hosted by me, Idris Talib Solomon. To subscribe to the Black Shutter Podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. When you get there, show us some love by dropping a 5-star rating or leaving a review. This will help with our rankings, which essentially helps more Black photographers get exposure. Make sure to check us out online at blackshutterpodcast.com to read the show notes, learn more about our guests, and check out some of their work. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Peace. Until next time.